Hello, I'm Johan Mark Jones, and welcome to the Charity Digital Podcast. Over the past year, charities in the UK and across the world have focused on immediate solutions, prioritising short-term fixes, sometimes at the expense of long-term planning. But as the vaccine programme reaches full swing and normality seems kind of, maybe, hopefully within reach, it's time for charities to prioritise the long-term. And that means looking at financial management. From budgeting to forecasting, from reporting to strategizing, every element of financial management is essential, particularly with reference to long-term stability. And at present, too many charities overlook, ignore, or simply dismiss financial management. Some charities lack the necessary knowledge and skills, others lack time and resources, others do not have the right digital tools in place. It's a huge problem. Research from Sage, for example, suggests that 38% of the staff involved in finance for UK charities lack confidence in all areas of finance. The research also shows that, in essence, the charity sector has low organisational financial literacy, which can lead to insufficiently detailed financial records, poor impact reporting, and a lack of financial planning. That, in turn, makes it difficult for charities to provide adequate transparency and accountability. Today's podcast aims to help. We want to explore the state of financial management in the UK charity sector, discussing, among other things, the contributing factors to low financial literacy, how charities can improve financial literacy, the benefits of improving financial literacy, and so much more. I'll let the guests introduce themselves. Joan?
Hi, it's so great to be with you all today. I'm Joan Benson, and I am the director of nonprofit industry marketing at Sage Intacct in the US. And I'm excited to be here. My background is in finance, accounting, and product marketing and industry, specifically in the nonprofit sector.
And Brom.
Hey, good morning, Johan and Joan. My name is Brom Duploy. I'm with Atlanta Convention and Visitors Bureau. We're a destination marketing organization, and by that, we are a non-for-profit organization that receive public funds. I'm the controller, and I've been with ACVB, we refer to ourselves as ACVB, for 20 years.
That's brilliant. Thank you both. So without further ado, I'll just give a little bit of a disclaimer. We're all at our homes, our respective homes, and we're recording over Zoom. So apologies for any background noises, building works, or cats meowing in the background. Without further ado, I'll ask the first question, which is, organizational financial literacy is defined as having the tools, capacity, and expertise to properly manage finances. Can you talk about some of the main contributing factors for low financial literacy in the charity sector? Ram, I'll start with you.
Yeah, this is because, you know, with charities, historically are operated and managed by people that are non-accounting people. They come from all other backgrounds of society, starting a charity for, you know, a good cause. And they lack sometimes the detail, of finance and also operating systems that's associated with running such an organization.
Yeah, you know, Brom, I think one of the things that comes to mind for me is, you know, when you are passionate about a certain cause and you want to start a nonprofit organization, you typically spend your time focused on executing on towards that mission, right? And the goals associated with that mission. So I think finance is at top of mind when you start a nonprofit organization. You know, it's typically fundraising and, you know, and all the programs associated with that mission. So I think it's, you know, it's kind of a secondary thing that when people start to get bigger and grow and get more complex, that's when it really starts to be important and critical from a financial perspective.
Yeah, and then also with that, coupled with that, you know, people start, as I said, you know, something with a good cause. But then there are the statutory requirements by running such charities and, for instance, fundraising. So that's a lot of times it relates to something legal or finance. And those are things that people don't think about. And therefore, they require maybe some help or have to get some a little bit more training on those areas.
You know, and I think too, when you're really small and you're just starting out, or if you're just in general a smaller organization, I think that it really, you know, you have options. You can outsource your financial management if you need to, if you don't have the skills in-house. But I think as your organization grows, your funding tends to get more complex. And there's just expectations from donors, from board members, from the community. You know, they want to see that transparency and they want to see that real-time reporting. And honestly, your organization needs visibility and line of sight into what's really going on, because they need to be equipped to make better decisions and make decisions more quickly and be able to report on their success, because you want the donors to be able to see the impact that you're having, and you want to be able to provide that information as a good steward in real time so that people feel like they're a part of what you're doing. It's really going to really make a difference from the, you know, the long-term sustainability of the organization to be able to have not only the transparency and the real-time reporting and visibility, but also, you know, when we look at like charity evaluators and they're looking at, you know, how you communicate your information, your key information, your performance metrics, all of those things, because donors today are so tuned in, you know, because of the internet and all the access to information, they're looking to see if they're going to give money to your organization. They want to make sure that that money is going to really go to something that's going to have impact for the specific mission that they're interested in. And there's really not a better way to demonstrate that than by your financial metrics. So I think the more you grow, I think the more important and the more critical it is that you really have, one, a commitment to financial management and having strong people in that role. But also what we're finding is that the CFOs and the controllers, they are really strategically driving these nonprofit organizations. The ones that are growing and dynamic, they're really driving the organizations to new levels. And so I think it just becomes more critical the larger the organization grows.
Absolutely right, Joan. And with that, you know, you mentioned visibility and the 24/7 connectivity. You know, not too long ago, organizations work on reporting that was on the past. Today, people don't want to know what happened a month ago or 2 months ago. They want to know, where's my how's my money utilized today? So therefore, people want to have insight as to what is really happening, how my donations has been utilized, where is it being applied to, who are benefiting from this, and they want to know now, as I said. So that's critical. And today, software and software providers are aligned to actually provide that service.
You know, that reminds me of a survey that I read about with CFOs and finance leaders across the world. And one of their biggest concerns was that they were having to spend too much time in the paperwork and in the, you know, kind of the monotony of what we have in the accounting world. And they weren't really able to have that time to rise above that, to make good decisions fast when they needed to, and to be able to really lead the organization forward. So I think that's another aspect of this, is that, you know, as you grow, you know, there's a lot more stuff going on, especially in the back office. So I think that's another really thing to consider, is that we want to be able to free those people up from some of that manual mundane work, spreadsheets or whatever it is, so that they can really have that strategic lens and they can spend that percent of their time that they need to in really driving the organization forward and in really helping the whole entire organization focus from an operational, administrative, and financial perspective to be able to ultimately to better support the mission.
Yeah, and you know, I was just thinking, Joe, you know, for me, that's been in the industry for a little while. In the early 2000s, you heard the term paperless, right? Everyone wanted to be paperless, and there was a huge efforts done for organizations to be paperless. Yet in today, a huge component of the operations of organizations are still manually task and deal with paper. And however, the technology has advanced, and now we're starting to talk about digital transformation. And, you know, in that digital transformation, for instance, where something like digital currencies and blockchain can help us, that maybe help in efforts of trying to get donations and fundraising. So there's a part of organizations still lacking, and the technology has jumped so far ahead, and I think with COVID-19, that has expedited a lot of these processes and enhancements. And I think a huge component of that, what you touch on, is obviously automation. And automation is something that people look for or thinking about, that something in the past, but it is happening all around us now. And I am, as I was saying that, I was actually using the little words. There's a great article written by Laura Stanley, How Charities Can Reclaim a Day with Automation. And this is on the website of Charity Digital. So I thought it was a great article, and she used an example of a church, community church, that introduced automation and the benefits of that. So I think that would be a good article to read. There is so much coming like from the early 2000s as to where we are now, and yet people are still talking about it is things that's in the future to come, but it's already here and it's happening.
Yeah. And Bram, in addition to just our daily work and the things that go on in the back office of a nonprofit organization, I think, we don't have a lot of control over compliance changes and things like that. When we're required, either from a grantor or from the government or whomever, to change the way we report our finances as a nonprofit organization, we're kind of caught in the middle, right? So it's one thing to automate, our day-to-day processes, but when something happens that we really have no control over, like a pandemic, you really need then, it's when you really need that technology to support both automation, remote workforces, artificial intelligence, all those benefits that are going to help us quickly and easily manage compliance and reporting changes. We have to start changing the way we report our net assets, for instance, or whatever the case might be. And I think it's, instead of pushing more money into the back office, the goal ultimately is to be more efficient and more economical in the back office, so more of the funds we have can go to the programs and the mission itself. So I think that really ultimately is the bottom line. We want to spend less in the back office and be more productive while we're doing it, and be able to push more money into the mission programs themselves.
That's a great point, Joan. And the thing is, coupled with that, with automation, with software and costs relating to the software. Yes, 20 years ago and before that, software used to cost a lot of money. And it was only the rich organizations or charities that could afford it to implement automation. But today, there are so many software, niche software that can be used. For example, in our organization, which is a mid-sized organization, we use a little software, and I think I'm allowed to say it. It's called HubDoc. And what it does, it is actually importing your invoices automatically into our payment system. And, the amount, the cost of it, of just doing that, is under $100. So it's very cheap, and it becomes cheaper. And with, technology that making all these enhancements, and it's all in the cloud, the user, the end user, is actually gaining more in terms from a cost saving. And because not only do they save on time and effort to do data entry and all those manual tasks, but the software becomes cheaper because there's such a huge competition among all these software companies. Every day you hear about a new one coming up, a new payment system, a new CRM, everyone is trying to do, and they all are trying to compete with one another. And yet we are gaining the benefit of it becoming cheaper and cheaper.
You know, that's one of the things I would encourage you to do if you're, you know, you're looking to upgrade your technology platforms and your technology applications is, you know, with your board of directors, you know, in a nonprofit organization, you know, we're all very budget conscious and budget focused. And it's all about, you know, how much we have to spend and how we can best spend it. But I would encourage you to really look at the use case and develop your case for what you want to acquire from a technology perspective, and look at the different savings that you're going to get from that, and build your case to the board or the executive leadership team for your purchase based on those savings, because we typically see people with significant savings in cash flow, for instance, or a lot of savings from their audit because it's all done remote now, or a lot of savings just from spend control and spend management. And like in normally in our case, most of our customers, I think Brom being one of those, they say that the software pays for itself in typically 6 months. Well, so that's a net decrease in expense if you're a nonprofit organization. So I think you need to really look at and work on making that case for the initial spend that you need for technology, and then look at the savings you're going to generate on the back end and build your case that way. And then it becomes more of an investment versus a spend.
That's really, thanks for that both. One thing we see in the charity sector working within finance, and I do some writing about finance, is there does seem to be this a bit of a gulf between people working in charities and the idea of finance. I think what I've learned recently is it's actually not as complex as it seems. And I think we're hoping to sort of bridge that gap in a lot of ways. And I think that's something we're working on. I was just wondering if you could talk a bit about some concrete steps that charities and the broader sector could do to improve financial literacy, whether that means accessibility or just training with internally and externally and having a wider community, perhaps things like that. Joan, I'll go to you.
Sure. Well, I will say one of the positives coming out of this pandemic and the move to everything virtual is that there is more free training and education available than ever before that I've ever seen in my very long career. So there's so many more opportunities from a training perspective. And the whole remote element of this, I think, makes it so much easier for us. And so I think there's opportunities from the perspective of, you know, whether you're using outsourced financial management, because they can do it all remotely now. And like Brom was talking about, you can just scan all those or electronically bring those invoices and things in. It's much more efficient and less expensive to have those kind of providers today. And so you have opportunities for training, but you also have opportunities to reduce cost, which then opens up the opportunity to hire some, you know, maybe the next level of financial person that's really going to have an impact on the organization.
Yes, Joan, you know, a great website, Udemy. I think I pronounced it a little wrong, but those are the largest, you know, sort of self-help websites that you can go and do formal education at a very reduced price. But then also, if you just go to YouTube and you type in the word charity finance teaching, then excuse me, the amount of educational videos that's there. And, you know, I use it myself all the time. The quality and people that are sharing the knowledge is just unbelievable. So it's there. And I think what it takes maybe just from the organization itself or the charity is someone that just can lead the effort to say, for example, well, Popil, let's spend the day, you know, we all spend time in meetings, right? But how about changing one of those meetings in a training session once a week, once every 2 weeks? And, you know, go to YouTube, go to Google, go to all those websites and search and see what they can come up. Spend a half hour on a topic, it's for free. It's available. And you know, with sharing monitors, and you know, anyone on your team can be at their home. You can share it. You can make it an occasion. There's something that's just there to use for free.
You know, Brom, that reminds me. I think one of the ways too that we educate nonprofit organizations across the organization, because you know, typically we have a gap in our industry. We have a gap between the development side of the organization and the back office of the organization. And trying to bridge that gap can have such an amazing benefit and impact to the organization. And one of the ways we can do that is through something like you're talking about, but even in just an internal meeting, and just to one, automate, like you were talking earlier about automating, but bringing the systems together, the fundraising side with the finance side, and helping them to see the metrics and bringing over information like that, statistical in nature, combining that with those financial metrics and really being able to say, this is how much we spent to serve a meal this year. It cost us this much last year, this much last quarter, whatever we want to look at, and really bring the whole organization along to say, this is what we're able to capture by doing these types of things and having these systems. We can tell how much we're spending to give immunizations, or how much we're spending to teach kids to increase their reading level by 2 grades, or whatever the case might be, and start to really infuse that into the entire organization so they can really, we can bridge that gap and we can understand both sides of what we're trying to do and measure and get those outcomes up. And everybody then buys into and is a part of capturing that important data and looking at the numbers and understanding what it means as far as impact to the organization.
Yeah, Joan, you know, I'm taking myself as an example that has developed all those key metrics in dashboards. And, you know, so many people talk about dashboards, but it is something that takes time to set up and to develop. And, you know, a lot of software today from the shelf has basic dashboards and reports and things like that. But as time goes on and you learn a little bit more about your organization and your industry, you want maybe specific KPIs that you want to track. And then, you know, a lot of times those dashboards that's, you know, kind of like off the shelf is, you know, one fits for all. But if you want something specifically, you know, you need to kind of like, well, where do I start with that? And today in the software, the help function, it is very helpful. I've taught myself in terms of creating reports and dashboards by just following the help function in the software. It is very helpful, and they have videos. And then sometimes it takes you out to an external site, and you can also, sounds like an old gramophone for those who knows what's a gramophone. You know, you go to YouTube and you would be amazed, something that's pertaining to the software that you are using, someone has made a video of it. And I found some of those already, and I watch them, and I go and, you know, I practice and do something. And before you know it, you know, you have something set up. So it becomes a thing where it becomes by the individual as well. You know, we shouldn't just always rely on, well, the organization should provide us with this, or therefore I cannot do that. You know, I think, you know, anyone that's really interested in the and proud of their work, you know, would take the time and effort to go and do a little bit of self-help to educate themselves, because the tools are there and it's all for free. It only takes a little bit of using a search engine or the help function.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. We have one final question, which is a bit different. It's, what advice would you give to a charity worker or a charity professional who doesn't have much knowledge of finance, is feeling a bit overwhelmed by it because it can be a little overwhelming? What advice would you give them for sort of first steps to take? Joan, I'll go to you.
Okay, great. You know, I think I just try to put myself in that situation, in that position. And I think if you just start small and start with what are the key measures that really show what your organization's about and what your mission is. Figure out how you can measure those and track those. And then bring that into the whole fundraising, the development side of the organization through social media, for instance. Social media is so powerful to tell your story. And there's no better way to tell your story than have these great metrics that are typically statistical and financial in nature, but that are going to express how successful you are at doing what you say you're about, right? And being able to help the development side from that social media perspective to talk about how many clean water wells you've drilled and how much you were able to reduce cost of bringing fresh water to people or whatever your mission's about, bring that into your social media. And whether that's your side of the organization or the other side of the organization, it's so powerful. Both the images, the power of the metrics, and the impact that you're having makes a huge difference in the sustainability of your organization. And there's no better platform than social media to really get that out there and to really tell the world and elevate your story through very powerful metrics and images.
Yeah, Johan, you know, another good tactic that you can use is actually approaching other related charities. What I found, the charity community love to share. They're always willing to share. Therefore, they're in a charity organization because that's what they want to do. They want to help people. So therefore, approach them, ask them questions. Go and search for such a charity organization that's similar. It doesn't have to be specific, but look at someone that is maybe been around for a little while, maybe someone that's been for 2 or 3 years operating, or, you know, preferably someone longer if you can. But, you know, for someone that's kind of just starting, look at those young ones and see what they've accomplished and ask them advice. And then, as Joan said, reach out to social media, post a question on Twitter or something. Hey, is there someone out there that knows something about setting up a financial system, or, you know, any topic that comes to mind? It's very powerful. I actually saw now something just the other day on TikTok. Someone was asking advice in a TikTok. It was someone that was, asking... it was not a charity, but was someone that was just asking and doing something funny about asking about accounting. I think I need to go and find it, but it's doable, and it's there. It's just reach out, ask.
And there's lots of communities. There's lots of nonprofit communities. I know we have one internally in our organization, and there's a lot of platforms and communities where the thing that's great about nonprofits, like Brom said, is we all like to talk and share and have relationships and know each other. And that's our most powerful part of our company's community organization is the nonprofit space, because everybody's open about their finances, about what they're having struggles with or what they need or what they're looking for. And they just, you know, they just will just type it in the chat and ask, who's doing this? Who's figured out how to do that? Where are you doing this? What conference are you going to? You know, where are you getting, you know, training for this? And they're all sharing back and forth. So look for those platforms, because it's such a valuable assistance to people in all aspects of the organization to really be able to develop the organization and bring everybody up.
Yeah, John, you know, and those platforms, you know, all of them have a community-based feature. I haven't come across anyone that doesn't have it anymore. They're all set up for that, where you can pose a question. And again, people are just so willing to help. I use them all the time. And I always get positive feedback and great help. And I've actually built some very good professional friendships by using these community shared platforms. So, you know, that is it is available. And so I would really, you know, encourage people, you know, look around, play around with the software. Don't just think about, well, it is task driven to do a specific task on the software, they all have these community boards, which is very helpful.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, both of you. I think the message there was to reach out. And speaking of reaching out, to wrap up, we say there's lots of information that can be found on Sage's website and on the Charity Digital website. Reach out to us, pop some questions to us, and I'm sure our speakers would love to hear from anyone if they have further questions. I'd like to thank both our speakers for taking the time to join us today, and I'd like to thank you all at home for listening. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we hope to see you again next time. Cheers.